ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सलि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, then shloka 4. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadish kamaye mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktir ahituki tvai. O Lord of the universe, I do not desire material wealth, materialistic followers, a beautiful wife, or fruit of activities described in flowery language. All I want, life after life, is unmotivated devotional service unto you. Sanmodana Bhashyam. The sadhaka must attentively receive the sound of the holy name from the spiritual master. Thereafter he may chant the name devoid of nam aparads. By this process, the previously mentioned four qualities will gradually appear in his heart. Right, the previous four meaning the humility, tolerance, respect for others, not looking for respect for yourself. But if the sadhaka's attachment to sensual pleasures is not severed, his original spiritual identity cannot manifest. Thus bhakti, the flavor of the hladini potency, cannot be transformed into the bhava of conjugal attraction. See, if you're attached to here, then that means, see, the difficulty is, as we were discussing before, is attachment to something means there has to be a desire for it. And for there to be a desire for it means there has to be an identity. That identity is connected with a field of activities. Does that make sense? So if you're trying to manifest your spiritual identity, then that can't be done if you're maintaining this material identity. Right? One may say, well, it's material desires, and then, but I'm devotional. Yes, you're devotional, and then at the same time you're manifesting the other desires. So it's your identity and you're being devotional. You understand? But spiritual identity means there's only spiritual identity. Material identity is there, and that can start to be spiritualized. Right? So you can have both happening at once to some degree. But spiritual identity means it's only spiritual identity. There is no material identity. Right? Does this make sense? So, therefore, if one's maintaining material attachment, then that will not manifest. That's why it's said anartha nivriti, because of all anarthas, that identifying as the part of the material energy, that's like your greatest anartha. Does that make sense? We may have other anarthas that are there, that are taken care of at the point of what we call anartha nivriti. But between, asakti and bhava, then that is where the anartha nivriti stage means where the stage is you give up the material identity altogether. One is only situated on the spiritual platform. That platform then is also considered anartha nivriti. So in other words, the process from shraddha up to asakti, that whole thing can be counted as anartha nivriti. Because faith means you're giving up mundane faith. You're starting to develop spiritual faith. You're taking up association of devotees rather than materialistic association. You're taking up bhajana kriya. You're taking up spiritual activities as opposed to material. Spiritual activities as opposed to material. Then you're making actually determination to really give up the material. Right? But it's not fully given up until asakti, between asakti and bhava. When you come to the platform of bhava, then there is no conditional nature. Does that make sense? So that's why then it's said that unless that's gone, the spiritual identity won't manifest. Right? So even those who like to play around with it, and even if they have some idea of it beforehand, doesn't mean you can use it. Because it's only is usable when there is no material identity. But to have material attachment means you have to have an immaterial identity to go with it. Does that make sense? Because you have a desire that has a field of activities. That field of activities then gives rise to desire. That desire, by being contemplated, becomes attachment. Then you make the endeavor for it. Right? So attachment's already quite a ways down the line of this whole process. Does that make sense? So it's not that, oh, you can do this and do that at the same time. And the thing, that's sahajya. That's making it easy, cheap. You know, we have all the material, but we have all the spiritual. No. One may have the material, but one is trying to engage it in Krishna's service. One is trying to purify it. So that's progressive. Because of that, then there is starting to become spiritual understanding and spiritual realization. But spiritual identity means the realization of one's identity is complete. Right? One, or let's say at least you're not confused on whether you're spiritual or material. That you're situated properly on the transcendental platform. Does this make sense? Right? So that's why he's making this point. That's why this verse then is so important, is that the other one is the attitude you require. Right? It means you're starting from the, but you understand the Sankirtan mission. You understand how it all works together and its importance. You understand how we're not in, let's say, the ideal position. We're in the material sphere instead of the spiritual. Then we develop that mood of humility. From that, then one is able to give up material attachments. Right? So, nadanam, najanam, nasundri. Then you come to your natural stage. Do we see something else going parallel to this? Another formula for how we put together Vaishnava understanding. It's working in exactly the same thing. You see it? Okay. If you develop the position that I am, how you say, servant of Krishna, right? If that identity is there, right, which is the fifth element of Sharanagati, then you can become meek and humble. When you're meek and humble, then you can give up those things that are unfavorable, except what is favorable. Then one can come to the platform of being actually situated as Krishna, as your protector and maintainer. That makes sense? In other words, we're going through the mentality here. But to start that, you have to actually know what's going on. Right? It means for you to identify as a devotee means you have to know who Krishna is, you have to know who I am, everything like that. Right, so the Sambandha Gyan is there. So therefore, then the first and second verse, that's taken care of. Does that make sense? You're establishing properly what is the Sankirtan mission, and then where are we in relationship to that? Right? Then we see this process starts. Right? Does that make sense? So everything is consistent. It's just a matter of what part is expanded or not. Right? The Dasamul, then there's three main parts. Right? So Sambandha has been expanded to seven. Or eight. Right? Right? While in Vastutrai, it's not. Like that. You like the, I say, the mystical effect and all that. Is that so? Oh, we met the, how you say, the non-Australians, because they're not this body, but spirit souls today. Does this make sense? Yeah? Yes?
When we're trying to accept Krishna as our protector and maintainer, sometimes we can make the mistake of becoming impersonalist.
How would you become an impersonalist?
Negating, because sometimes Krishna might protect and maintain us, because the medium of Lakshmi is this material energy. So until we're on the platform where we're just fully, like, seeing everything completely spiritual and interacting spiritually, then is how can you how can you differentiate where Krishna might be assisting you or Maya might just be testing you? You know, like, so we can depend on Krishna as our maintainer and protector. Yeah? And then it can seemingly like that we can be offered some material protection, but seemingly on a transcendental level. So how do we know whether this is just trick of Maya, or if Krishna is actually fulfilling subtle needs?
I will have to give a generic answer.
Okay.
Because it would say very, it's a very specific question in your mind, but as it goes through the social transition and it comes out your mouth, it's extremely generic. So the point is one is supposed to perform one's prescribed duties. In performing one's prescribed duties without attachment to the results, then Krishna provides, doesn't provide, that's up to him. That's the point. It's in connection with duties. It's not Krishna my maintainer and protector and I do nothing.
Yeah.
One is performing one's duties.
So if the mood is kept in one of detachment, then just one of moods.
Not detachment, but naishkarmya.
Yeah.
But this naishkarmya, as we mentioned, is that the stages that you're going through is that the means if we're looking at it from material attachment, we're going to look at it from material attachment and spiritual attachment. From material attachment, then you're doing it for yourself and you couldn't care less for authority. So that's just sinful. Then better than that is you're doing it for yourself but according to authority. That's called piety. Right? Then you start to do it for yourself according to authority, but you give the results to Krishna. Right? And then it comes to, so this is still out like aropya, but then you come to the point of naishkarmya, is that you're performing your duties according to authority only to please Krishna. Okay? Then that, from the standpoint of material attachment, then that is considered the most elevated platform. So that's generally what we speak about when we're speaking about naishkarmya. We're speaking from that side, right? Because then for us, that will be, you know, very elevated, that we're performing our activities not for ourselves, but, you know, the results are for Krishna. So we're not, but the focus is on not being attached to the result. That's why it's considered part of the jnana bhakti. So, but if we look at it from spiritual attachment, it's actually the lowest position. Because all it is we're not attached to the material, but the point we're not attached to the material is to please Krishna. So our pleasing Krishna is to not be attached to the material. You understand? But it's still all about us. And okay, it's not, we're not being, you know, not aware of Krishna and all this, but the point is it's not about Krishna, really. It's about us and elevating ourselves, because we know if we take this position it will do good, or by being material attached that's not good. But then next stage is that we're actually doing it, it means to please Krishna. You know what I'm saying? And then you get to the point where it's just all it is Krishna's happiness is all you care about. So the form of it may look like attachment, may look like detachment. So there's nothing that the gopis are doing technically that looks like detachment. You know? It all looks like attachment. But it's being done for Krishna's pleasure. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is this overlap of the external. That's generally what is the problem. But what you're trying to do is that is if the mentality is material, then the form is going to be material. The mentality is spiritual, the form is spiritual. What's the problem is when it's in between, when it's transforming from material to spiritual, you're still dealing with material form. So on the material platform, you say it's not good. Mother Yashoda has a huge house. I think there's 100 rooms. No one's going to say, wow, what a sense enjoyer, you know, like that. They're not at all. They're going to be amazed at how she can use 100 rooms in Krishna's service. But, you know, here, if somebody built themselves a house here in Mayapur, it had 100 rooms, everybody talking about what a you know, materialist they are, right? So because the form, the material form, you know, somehow becomes very obvious. But in that transferring from the material to the spiritual, it may be bad, it may be good. It depends upon the mentality and the situation. So that's why when there's too much emphasis put on the form, there will be mistake. Or if there's no emphasis put on the form, there will be mistake. Like that. So there has to be this proper balance between the mentality and the form. Yes, progressively it's going. And then, so that's why it's according to your prescribed duties, because you may be a grihastha, you may be working in this kind of mentality, and in this mentality, one is actually completely doing everything for Krishna, so one is actually on the platform of sannyas. But the form of it will still look like grihastha life, it doesn't look like sannyas at all. Does that make sense? So one may mistake that they're grihasthas and this and that, but it may not, it means... Yes, the form of it, the duties of it are, but the actual results of it, the effect of it is not. It's sannyas. That's why this transformation in between, that's the difficult part. That's where the confusion is. Maya we know, Krishna we know, who's Shiva? You know what I'm saying? Because on one side, Sadashiv, then he's a devotee. Like that. But Shambhu is not necessarily... We always look at him as Sadashiva in that connection. All right? But Sadashiva technically is Vishnu. He's just the mood of destruction. Right? Because material means creation, maintenance, and destruction. So that's there. But Shambhu is not. He's a demigod. He's the incarnation of the mode of ignorance. You know, so that element is there of it, but still it's not... You're not dealing with Vishnu Tattva. You know what I'm saying? So the middle always has this transformation aspect.
So it's the way that we're looking.
That's why perspective is so important, right? Just like the modern says perspective is everything, but what they mix out on is their perspective has absolutely nothing really to do with reality. Yes, what they're saying, perspective is everything, is right, but their perspective basically is not right at all. Has not much relevance for Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? You want to, as an individual, be comfortable with yourself in your modern environment and fit in and not feel in any way pressured to be Krishna conscious and in that way be called a fanatic, then you can say, yes, that perspective is right. But as far as dynamic devotional service, you know, I think kids can do better. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's a problem. That's a weakness. Okay? Does that get to know? Yes?
Is it best to say that if a sadhaka's attachment is natural, but is not severe, his original spiritual identity cannot manifest? Maybe explain what are those obstacles which do not allow severe
No, if his attachment to sensual pleasure is not severed, means, in other words, if he's engaged in sensual activities for himself, that's going to be a problem. So it has to be, whatever the engagement of senses has to be connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? Yes. Because he's identifying with the field of activities. As we mentioned before, his identity is within the material energy. Therefore, he is seeing himself as the field, kshetras, instead of kshetragya. Right? So even when, as before, like Madhya's question, we bring ourselves to the point of kshetragya. But the point is are we kshetragya for Krishna or for ourselves? So that we've gotten to kshetragya, that's better than being situated on the mundane platform. But it still isn't perfect. It means, well, we can say it's perfect, but it's still not necessarily bhakti. I'm saying the devotees are practicing it for the purpose of bhakti, therefore it's included within bhakti. Right? But the impersonalists also practice the same naishkarmya. But bhakti is not actually an element of it at all. Does that make sense? They just don't care about that. Yes, the sambandha is wrong. Because they're not actually seeing Godhead in their relationship with Him. You know what I'm saying? So all those elements of Krishna as the Supreme, as the Lord of Rasa, you know, as He's the source of all energies and everything. And that's a problem. Right? And He doesn't understand the difference between the conditioned and the liberated soul. Is that okay? Okay. This verse explains the pure form of sadhana bhakti. Here, sadhana bhakti means the process of chanting in two ways. The form of sadhana bhakti in two ways. The direct explanation stresses the principal symptoms of bhakti, which is loving devotional service to Sri Krishna, bhava bhakti, while the expressions nadanam najanam point to the attendant symptom of pure bhakti. The secondary symptom of bhakti has two concomitants: freedom from all other desires, anyabhi lashita shunyam, outside the path of bhakti, and the absence of the influence of karma and jnana. Right? These come up, we can see is that when the explanation of bhakti, the creeper is there, then this has two leaves. And so one is that how you say freedom from desire, and the other one is freedom from these karma and jnana. These are the first two. When the creeper first starts, these are the first two that come, first two leaves. As long as loving devotion to Krishna, anakulyena krishnanushilanam, is encumbered by anyabhi lashitam, karma, jnana, yoga, and so on, bhakti cannot be uttama, exalted. It is visible merely as shadow devotion, or bhakti abhas. Right? So in other words, you have this first part, and then you're saying is that you're only absorbed, bhava bhaktir ahaituki twai, that you're absorbed in the service of Krishna. So the pure sadhana is there, at the same time as those things to be avoided are mentioned. Right? Does that make sense? How to cross beyond bhakti abhas. The shloka, in fact, reveals how the shadow bhakti is to be dissipated. It is stated here, O Lord, I do not hanker for dhanam, wealth, janam, following, or sundarim kavitam, beautiful poetry or literature. Here, dhanam means the wealth of piety incurred by strictly following the path of varnashram, which includes materialistic karmakanda activities and so on. Right, because you're following the path of varnashram, it may be for, you know, connected more in connection with Krishna or not. But by following it, one gets facility. So doing it for that or being attached to that, that's going to be a problem. Right? Because that's generally what we think of as religion. Religion, when it's being thought of, will think it's pious, so therefore we get good results. So if things aren't going good for me, I may think, what's wrong with Krishna conscious? What's wrong with Krishna? I'm doing everything right. Why is Krishna doing this? Does that make sense? That's a symptom of this. That we're actually is dhanam. Because we're thinking, I'm performing my religious activities, why I'm not getting material benefits? Or at least, why I'm not being not bothered? You know what I'm saying? If that's considered a benefit. Does that make sense? Yeah. Further clarified, dhanam implies all the paraphernalia, gross and subtle, required to fulfill a person's desires for sense enjoyment in this world and in heaven. The word dhanam indicates wife, sons, servants, subjects, friends, relatives, and so on. Right? Anybody who will be a dependent in any way, shape, or form. That's dhanam. You know, some kind of followers. Like that. So subjects here means even if you're doing management or something like that, those who are dependent upon you, who therefore they are respectful to you and all that, and you have a taste or an attachment of that kind of relationship. Does that make sense? So it's not janam just means it's family members also. You know, so some sit around and complain, oh, you know, big gurus, big sannyas, so many followers and this and that. But the only difference between the one complaining and the one they're complaining about is the one they're complaining about has more, that's all. You know what I'm saying? That's the only, but otherwise it's the same situation. You have followers. Now the point is it's not a problem of followers, the problem is it connected to Krishna or not? That's the point. No one complains Yudhishthira is the emperor of the world. Wow, this guy's got a problem with Janam here, right? You know, because everybody on the planet is his follower. But no one ever considers that, right? Because the mentality. Does that make sense? So it all comes back to if the proper duties are performed in the proper mentality for Krishna's pleasure, there's no problem. Education or learning is correctly defined as the culture that promotes attraction to and attachment for the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The expression Sundarim Kavitam does not refer to narratives of Lord Krishna's pastimes, or conclusive philosophical examinations of scripture, or transcendental literatures or poetry. Rather, it refers to mundane literatures and compositions. Such trivia are rejected. And what is desired? The loving service of Krishna, even in birth after birth. Let it be unwavering devotion devoid of any conditions. So he's pointing out, this also makes it very clear what's jnana and what's not. Right? So education and learning, the culture that promotes attraction to and attachment for the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. That's education, that's learning. Right? That's actual. So anything else other than that, then is this Sundarim Kavitam. Right? So one has to be very, very careful about that. So it's not that, oh, this is all gyan, just nitpicking and getting into these things, you know, like that. It's not important. No, it's about Krishna. It's about how to develop one's understanding and connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? Sorry. Unconditional devotion means that which is guided by no consideration other than Krishna's satisfaction. Right? So if it's about Krishna, if it's about studying the conclusions of scripture, then this is desirable. Or that culture means whatever is the practices that are going to help you or assist you in Krishna consciousness. Right? So Vaishnava etiquette, the basic lifestyle, the activities of the Pancharatra, all this is education. Right? That makes sense? You know, the service attitude, cleanliness, respect of authority, sense control, you know, proper performance of duty, all this is education. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so here then we have Dhanam, right? Janam, Sundarim. So these things are to be avoided. All right? Why would it now, here and here, one might ask, why is it sometimes it's done as Dhanam, Janam, Sundarim, then the Sundarim means women? Or Dhanam, Janam, Sundarim, Kavitam, then that's taken as the, you know, how you say, flowery language of the Vedas, or other such things. The element is that from education, the tendency is pride. Right? Because here they make a difference. Janam means wife, like this. So that means having, those are followers. But here the Sundarim, or here it says women, means those who are appreciating. Does that make sense? So if you have knowledge, those other things, then the tendency is to be proud. Right? That makes sense? And proud person likes to be told they're doing a great job. Right? So it doesn't mean just that. Others, you know, say some lady's there, all the other ladies say she's doing a great job. It's the same thing. That makes sense?
How to avoid not to become proud?
Means you're accepting of who your position actually is, right? In connection with Krishna from the second verse, and then you're trying to cultivate those attitudes within the third verse, right? Then one is able to apply this fourth verse. Is that okay? Yes.
Maharaj, if a superior is complimenting you.
If what?
If a superior.
If a superior is complimenting you.
Then it means that he's telling you what you're doing is right and also kind of encouraging you.
Yes. So, is that a problem?
No, I'm just asking. Is that right or wrong?
Is that right or wrong? It depends on the situation, but basically that's right. And in this context?
No, I just asked.
But it should be in context of what we're discussing. So you just want to know, okay, if superiors tell you you're doing a great job, is that all right?
Because sometimes we do not know what we are doing is right or not. So when superiors...
Yes, if they just happen to say on their own because you're doing a good job, then nice. But if you're doing your job so that they will say that you're doing a good job, then that's still within this realm of Sundarin. So it's all the mentality. Okay. Pure devotion never depends on liberation. In the jiva's struggle to be victorious over all the many miseries suffered in the cycle of repeated birth and death, ultimate victory lies ever beyond his capacity. It depends entirely on the Supreme Lord's will. All misery will automatically cease when, by the Lord's desire, the jiva is saved from the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, what is the use of a godless prayer for liberation that violates the precepts of pure devotion? This prayer of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expresses the soul's urgent need of bhava bhakti over all else. Quote, without waiting for the cycle of birth and death to be stopped by the Lord's grace, let me now have unconditional devotion at Krishna's lotus feet, life after life, regardless of what my present material situation is. Right? We understand this, that you don't have to be out of the material world to actually manifest pure devotion. Right? That can be manifest here. That's what's being brought out. That attitude is what will please Krishna. Because if it's like, well, if I'm liberated, then I can have devotion. That means your devotion is dependent upon liberation. So your devotion is subservient to liberation. So liberation is more important than bhakti. Does that make sense? Liberation is just the state of being situated in one's natural position, which for Krishna is just normal. So that's nothing special. So Krishna being situated just as normal, that's Atmarama. But he's expanded everything for rasa, to interact. So just being wanting to be on the normal platform, that has no interest to Krishna. Right? Because on the normal platform, then we're not manifest. We're manifest when his desire to taste interaction comes. You understand? So it can't be he's into interaction and we're on the platform of Atmarama. Does that make sense? So here, meaning Admiral, well, the point he's bringing out is that being freed from material contamination that is separate from Krishna. Right? That's what you were discussing before. The Naishkarmya, though it's just being freed from material contamination, that Naishkarmya then doesn't have, really much worth. They get you out of the material world temporarily, then you'll be back. Right, so unless it's connected to Krishna, it won't be actual liberation. It won't be real liberation. Right? Does this make sense? Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya Lila 20, 27, 28, and 30. Quote, as long as Lord Chaitanya spoke in this way, his humility increased and he began praying to Krishna that he could discharge pure devotional service. Wherever there is a relationship of love of Godhead, its natural symptom is that the devotee does not think himself a devotee. Instead, he always thinks that has not even a drop of love for Krishna. My dear Lord Krishna, I do not want material wealth from you, nor do I want followers, a beautiful wife, or the results of fruitive activities. I only pray that by your causeless mercy, you give me pure devotional service to you, life after life. Okay, so that's the conclusion of what Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given. And now then, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments on this. Quote, O Lord of the universe, I have no desire for material wealth, following, or beautiful poetry. You are my object of worship and devotional service life after life. I only pray that I may have unconditional love and devotion at your lotus feet. Does that make sense? Because if that's what's there, because that's what is pleasing to Krishna. That's the interaction with Krishna. So, for Krishna, that's what's important. Does that make sense? Because being freed from material nature, that's just a state of basically existent mind, actually. It's just you identify that it's not connected to Krishna, it's material. You can identify it's connected with Krishna, it's not material. Right? Then it's on the Brahman platform. It will be inferior of the varieties of Brahman platforms that are there. Right? So the platform of Brahman, the supreme Brahman, then is Krishna as a person. Does that make sense? So all it is just being situated in not as nice a place or being situated in a nice place. But the point is the devotion is what's prominent, not getting out of the material energy. Now, from being here for so long, we put liberation as something very, very special. But actually, liberation isn't something very special. It happens automatically when one stops identifying with material energy. Right? When one doesn't see oneself as the kshetra, the field, he sees himself as kshetra-gya, then he's no longer materially contaminated, really. Does that make sense? He's liberated. So it's because we identify, therefore we see everything else in connection with our identity. There, that's where the illusion lies. Does that make sense? Yeah? Sundarim Kavitam refers to dharma, religious principles found in the Vedas. Dharma means artha, or wealth. Janam means wife, children, relatives, etc., who are objects of kama, so-called love or lust. Okay, so here, Sundarim Kavitam, dharma, religious principles found in the Vedas. That's why he also says, or the results of fruit of activities. I do not want followers. You know, as we mentioned, like family, like this, beautiful wife, then that's also something within that. But then it's also the results of fruit of activities. Does that make sense? It means, we also mentioned before about education or learning. Kavitam Sundarim, because people are learning the Veda. But that learning the Veda, you only, in the Vedic consideration, you know it, you practice it. It's only a modern thing that you can know something and not practice. But here is you know it, you practice it. So practicing it, you will get facility. Therefore, the results of karma. Right? You know, and then that will go back into dhanam. But you're desiring the results only when you have it, then you can deal with it. Does that make sense? Okay, so he's saying dharma, yeah, okay. Sundarim Kavitam is dharma, and then dhanam means artha. So you're going to perform the religious principles that are going to get you that artha. Right? Because we see is that the prayojan of when it's obtained, then that moves back to sambandha. Right? So getting the facility from Sundarim Kavitam by the dharma performed, then you get dhanam, artha, or wealth. Right? If that is there, then you have followers, this and that. right? And through performing your duties there, then you get more facility. So it goes around there. Or you can take it as dhanam janam, then, I mean sundarim dhanam janam, then it means then you get the you perform the activities that will, and with the understanding that gets you the facility that therefore you can have sense gratification. Right? So the actual interaction is the janam. So janam is the relationship. Right? It's the middle ground between the facilities and gaining of facilities. Does that make sense? Did you catch that in the way of the sambandha videya prayojana? Yeah. The Lord declares, I am not merely abhorred by sense gratification derived through religiosity, wealth, and lust, but I am appalled at the idea of transitory liberation from the cycle of birth and death. I do not want these four Vedic goals, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, to be the cause for my rendering service at your lotus feet. Right. So here he's saying, so basically he's saying, I'm not merely abhorred. So it means there's a problem with sense gratification gained through religiosity, wealth, and desire, dharma, artha, and kama. But more of a problem is he's appalled at the idea of liberation that has nothing to do with Krishna. So that's worse. Right? Because the point is getting out of here means going there to be in association of Krishna. So you're giving up material dharma, artha, and kama to be engaged in spiritual dharma, artha, and kama. Right? So that means you're liberated from the material world. But to be give up material dharma, artha, and kama, to be liberated from the world and not get into the spiritual world, that's stupid. Because that's not what you're trying to get. Does that make sense? Yes, so he doesn't want, and so his point is he doesn't want any of these four to be the reason for rendering service. It's not because I want religious things and therefore it's good and nice, that's why I'm serving, or I want artha, that's why I'm serving, I want kama, that's why I'm serving, I want liberation, that's why I'm serving. One is serving because one wants to please Krishna, because of that devotion to Krishna. That's just being brought up here. Right? Persons who strictly adhere to Vedic Dharma worship Surya, the sun god. Those who desire wealth worship Ganesh. Those craving carnal pleasures worship Shakti, Kali or Durga. Those who strive for liberation or mukti worship Shiva. And those who worship Lord Vishnu as the source of Vedas do so for material motives. All these grades of worshippers are contaminated by materialism and are never to be considered as pure devotees. This type of Vedic worship is known as Panchopasana, or the worship of five demigods. Whether it is performed with or without material desire hardly makes a difference, for such worship is in fact impersonal in any case. Lord Vishnu can be worshipped purely and properly only by unmotivated devotional service. So they're worshipping these five. Right? So this is a problem, because they're worshipping for the benefits being got there. Even if they're not worshipping, just you're supposed to do your duty and worship from the platform, Naishkarmi, still, it's not devotional. Still atheistic. It's still impersonal. Right? So this Panchopasana, this is a big Vedic thing. The five worships. So they worship these five. The sun god Ganesh, Kali or Durga, some form of that, Shiva, and Vishnu as the source of the Vedas. Like that, much of the time you see in India, Satyanarayan puja. That means there's Vishnu supreme, but it's actually Vishnu in the mode of goodness. It's not actually Vishnu is transcendental. Does that make sense? So they're actually all still impersonalists. Yeah. Okay, here they're putting Surya Sangha, Dharma. All right, so you're getting Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha here, right? So Dharma from Surya, Artha from Ganesh, Kama from Durga, and Mukti from Shiva. Right? So you're dealing with those five. But the point is, when you're worshipping Vishnu as the source of the Vedas, then also you're not really getting out of here much either. That's also a problem. Okay? So scriptural statements relevant to the shloka. Bhavatat bhakti ahetuki, causeless devotional service. Devotional, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.11.25. O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire enjoy, I guess to enjoy, in Dhruva Loka, the heavenly planets, or the planet where Lord Brahma resides. Nor do I want to be supreme ruler of all the earthly planets, or the powers of mystic yoga. Nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. Means he doesn't desire any of these things, but at the same time, as whatever situation he's in, he doesn't mind as long as he's situated at the Lord's lotus feet. Yeah? And he doesn't want to be freed from the material, being in the material energy or being, going through the problems that are there, if that means giving up the Lord's lotus feet. Right? In Bhagavatam 11.2.42, quote, devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things. These three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the same way as pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person engaged in eating. Right? Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from all other things. So that's the whole point, is that when one is engaged in service, these others come automatically. One doesn't have to worry for it separately. That makes sense. Right? In other words, to get devotion, you don't have to worry about it. We will focus on certain things that are getting in our way simply because they're getting in the way. But not that itself is the devotion. No. The devotion is that you're focusing on those things to remove them so that you can progress in your devotion to Krishna. That's what makes it useful. Does that make sense? In other words, developing good qualities not in connection with Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, it's nice, but, you know, pigeons are also nice. You know what I'm saying? Deers are nice. You know, baby crocodiles are nice. Get bigger, then there's more of a problem. But Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.18. Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end, which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patal. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as in course of time we obtain miseries even though we do not desire them. Does that make sense? So just as you don't want misery, you'll get it. In the same way, you're looking for sense gratification or not, you'll get it. So, in other words, he's pointing out, you don't have to be bewildered and endeavor for sense gratification. You have to endeavor for developing love for Krishna. That's what it should be. Then the other things will come automatically. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. So then tomorrow we'll continue with today's Monday, right? So tomorrow is Shloka 5. As we go, then I think the commentaries and the purports get much shorter. It's only the first ones that are very, very big. Like that. Yeah. They're all quite much shorter. But they get more and more, only the last one, the eighth one, then has a lot more stuff. Okay, because it's in conclusion. But otherwise, we'll go through this quite quickly. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinanda ki Jainatai Gaura Premanandi
up is better. It's here. Mosquitoes.